Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm your host, Joseph Pache. America is getting older. In 1985, older adults accounted for 11% of the population, and by 2030, when the last of the baby boomers turns 65, older adults are expected to reach 20% of the population. Here in San Francisco, that number is projected to be 30%. It's said that it takes a village to raise a child. The same might be said about caring for our oldest citizens. Tonight, we'll be examining a movement called Aging in Place, in which individuals are proactively working together so they can live independently as they age. What are the challenges for older adults who want to stay in their homes? What can we do to ensure our oldest citizens enjoy a vibrant third and fourth act to their lives? And can this movement be an alternative to assisted living and even nursing homes? Well, we have three guests tonight to talk about these issues. First, we have Kate Hopke. She's executive director of San Francisco Village, a nonprofit organization of volunteers and members who are helping each other as they age and choose to live independently. Welcome, Kate.
Thank you, Joseph.
We're also joined in the studio by Dr. Patrick Arbour, and he's from San Francisco's Institute on Aging. He's a nationally recognized expert in the field of elderly suicide prevention and has worked on how isolation, loneliness, and depression uniquely impacts older adults. Welcome, Dr. Arbour.
Thank you very much.
And finally, we're joined by Roberta Rothman, a longtime resident of San Francisco and a member of San Francisco Village. Before retiring at the age of 70, Roberta ran several nonprofits in the city, including the Jewish Coalition for Literacy. Welcome, Roberta.
Happy to be here.
Great. And we'll invite you, our listeners, of course, to join our conversation. We'll open our phone lines in about 20 minutes. To join that conversation, you can dial 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at the KALW website, or on our Facebook page. And finally, you can reach us by tweeting us at cityvisionskalw. Are you an older adult living independently? How are you managing, and what challenges and opportunities are you finding at this stage of life? We want to hear from you. So I want to start by just framing the demographics of aging in this country and then in this area. So, Kate Hopke, we know our population is aging, but tell us more about who actually comprises this population. And where are we at in terms of the baby boomer population? What does it look like in this day and age?
So as you pointed out, Joseph, about 20% or one in five San Franciscans is over the age of 60, and that number is projected to be one in three in about 12 years. So what is that old saying about demography is destiny? Something like that, right? So we're definitely aging. It's a worldwide phenomenon. The interesting thing, so for San Francisco Village, our members are over the age of 60. So between the ages of 60 and, I would say, our oldest member is about 97. So just within that group, you have three different cohorts. You've got the baby boomers as the youngest ones. The oldest ones are the World War II generation. And in the middle is something called the silent generation. Now, this is the first time in history that we've had three distinct cohorts over the age of 60. And because we're living longer. And so it's a phenomenon. You know, there's a lot of there's different values that define each of these cohorts as well. So when we say that we, San Francisco Village, is an intergenerational community that dignifies aging, we're intergenerational just within our membership. But we also include volunteers. We have volunteers as young as high school students. And, you know, folks in their 30s and 40s, various ages, who step up and help our members with all kinds of things to help them stay independent.
And so tell us about how this group matches or doesn't the population of aging Americans around our country.
I'm not sure the statistics nationally, but I can tell you that in the state of California, 13% of Californians are currently over the age of 60, and that's about 5 million people. And that number is expected to double in the next 15 to 20 years.
And I have to say, this number is surprising to me, that the population of older adults or adults over 60 in San Francisco is as high as it is. What do you make of that?
For one thing, it's longevity. Well, and the baby boom generation is just huge, historically. There's more baby boomers, and that's been true since we were born, right? I think at the number something like 78 million of us. So I think that's part of it, and I think that the other generations, the silents and the GIs, are still with us. And so it's just, and this longevity curve is what some people refer to it as. It's permanent. There's the generations that follow us are going to be just as large, and we're all going to be living longer than we do now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and if Patrick I could just Arbor, add,
yeah, I was going to go to you next, actually.
Just what Kate is saying, and that we also have seen for quite a while now that the 85-plus age category is the fastest-growing age category today, and it's followed by the second-fastest-growing age category, which is the 100-plus. And when I give talks, I just gave a talk today in Santa Cruz, and I mention that, and, you know, I'm talking to a group of people, and I say, hey, look, we have all these years left, you know. So if you're 60 and the 85 plus is the fastest growing age category, you might live well into your 90s, possibly your 100s. And aren't you all excited about that? And of course, nobody is. And that's the strange kind of predicament that we're in, is that we all want to live longer, but we don't want to be older. So we want to live and be 50 for the next 50 years and just skip old age altogether. And that causes problems, you know, such as isolation and loneliness and fear, and 70's the new 50 and 60's the new 40. And I say to people, no, I'm 70, and 70 is not 50. Mm-hmm. 70 is 70. But we have to really pay attention to how resistant we are to the reality of what it means to get older in an ageist culture. And it's hard. You know, and that's why I think places like SF Village, of which I'm a board member and also a member of SF Village, is trying to say, you know, there's another way that we can do it, because most older people really would prefer to live in their homes, in their neighborhoods. And what has been getting in the way is that they haven't had a vehicle for staying connected. Because we tend to move people into senior housing or this or that. So that's one of the unique things of SF Village.
So how hospitable is San Francisco and the Bay Area to people over the age of 60? I'll actually ask all three of you that question. Roberta?
One of the things that I've noticed is the problem of transportation and the hills. I live on Nob Hill, and I noticed that there have been many changes going on lately, taking away parking spaces, more bicycle lanes. And when you're on the hill, you can't take a bicycle to go shopping. And a lot of older people, older than me, can't take the transportation. The buses are difficult for them. So there's not this understanding of what we need. Maybe more shuttles, maybe more. We have, obviously, Uber and Lyft, but not everybody can afford those. So I see transportation as a difficult problem. And the problem that older people don't like to drive at night. So, like, I'm the designated driver for a lot of my friends because I'm fine driving at night, but people don't. And they don't go out at night, and that causes more isolation.
Mm-hmm. Kate Hopke?
Housing is a huge issue. And, I mean, that's an issue for everybody across the age spectrum. But for older adults who are living in a rent-controlled apartment, the apartment might have been appropriate several years ago. It might have been a 5-floor walk-up, you know, without an elevator, and they could negotiate that when they were younger. But now that they're older, that's a real barrier. But they can't afford to move because they can't pay the new rates of rent. So can I give you an example?
Sure.
So one of our members, she's maybe 70 years old. She was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis many years ago, and she lives in one of these rent-controlled 5th-floor walk-up apartments. And she called us and said, you know, this is the help that I need. Could you find me a volunteer who would take me to the grocery store once a week and then help me carry those groceries up these 5 flights of stairs, and also help me get the laundry done because the laundry room is in the basement? And so we did. We found her a volunteer, and now 4 or 5 years later, these two are meeting each other every Monday afternoon to get these errands and chores accomplished, but it's enabling her to stay independently in that home that she can afford. So it's the village model is really innovative in that it really seeks to leverage social capital, neighbors and friends and people like this volunteer who, you know, he's just interested in helping somebody out. He has extra time and he wants, and the relationship now that they've forged is priceless to both of them.
I wanted to, before we widen the conversation, talk more about how the San Francisco Village came to be and how it works, I wanted to get a little bit more sense of the demographics of the aging population, of the population over 60 in San Francisco. So what's the proportion of men versus women? What's the racial and ethnic spread? What is the LGBTQ component to that group?
Well, I can say a few things about that. One is that across the board, we tend to have more older women than older men, although that gap is narrowing as men are living longer. And so that might shift down the road. And we're also, I think as a country, but certainly in San Francisco City and County, is that we have a very large group of non-Caucasian individuals. And so we're seeing increasingly older people in the African American population, the Asian American population, you know, the Native American population. So we're seeing, which is really an asset, I think, here in San Francisco to have such diverse older people. And then in terms of the LGBT elderly, generally, it's about 10% of the population of older people, and that number, you know, it's always kind of hard to get at actual numbers in the LGBT community because a lot of people don't want to disclose that, particularly in the older cohort, because coming out, even if it's just to respond to a survey, might be fraught with a lot of emotional issues for older people. But I think that it's, again, when I thought of your question earlier, I look at older people through a psychological and emotional lens. And what I would say, in addition to transportation and housing, as they were both saying, I also see fear of the future, as a tremendous issue. And that fear can really turn into anxiety and can lead to feelings of depression, which depression is often untreated and unrecognized. And I think that leads to older people self-medicating through alcohol or prescription medication. And that's a hidden epidemic that has been hidden for at least 30 or 40 years. And that just is very perplexing that we have such trouble talking about that. And then I think just social isolation and loneliness, which is the big dread of our time, that certainly San Francisco Village is trying to address that. Institute on Aging is addressing that through its programs. And I think lots of aging agencies are participating and really trying to see if we can't, you know, support people, you know, in terms of living, you know, in the neighborhoods that they would like to live in. But as Kate is saying, if you have 5 floors to go up without an elevator, there's going to be a lot of concern about what's going to happen to me down the road. And I think your example was really a good one. When health interferes with your ability to walk or climb stairs, you're in trouble, you know, in this town. And that's the other feature, is the cost of living here is really expensive, particularly if you were on a fixed income.
Yeah, what's the average income of people who belong to the San Francisco Village?
I don't know if I could answer that directly. I would say that we serve primarily a moderate to middle-income group of people. And one of the reasons that we do that is because there are a lot of services in San Francisco for folks that are low income. There's very little for people that don't qualify for those services. There's a significant gap for a large percentage of our population. So we have a membership fee, so that kind of restricts people if they can afford the fee. If they can't afford the fee, we offer scholarship. About 20% of our membership is on a scholarship.
Roberta, you're nodding your head there.
Well, I was saying in our circle, and I guess we should explain what circles are, but we've sort of broken up San Francisco into circles, neighborhoods. And so that we have our neighborhood circle. And I was thinking that within our own circle, we have different economic, social, and sometimes when we're planning things, I have to take that into consideration.
Yeah.
But the circles work because it's what we have. It's the idea that there are neighbors around. I like walking into Walgreens the other day and bumping into somebody from the circle,
right,
or going to Trader Joe's and seeing them. And I think one of the things we've talked about is that as we get older, our little circle of friends gets smaller. People move, people go, become ill, and people die. And I think one of the things that I found in the circle is that I've made several new friends within the circle, and they're in my neighborhood. Mm. So they're next door, and I feel comfortable that they're there. Also, for the safety issue, the fact that so many of us live alone, and the idea that there's somebody right in the neighborhood that we feel comfortable calling on is very important.
And for seniors in San Francisco and the Bay Area, how close do they live to their family?
Oh, that's it's a fascinating question. I think that I don't have statistics on this, but I think that a large number, many of us here in the Bay Area came from other places. And we left our natural support networks back in Indiana and Michigan and Minnesota and the various places that we came from. So a lot of folks that are in our village will tell us they moved out here in the 1960s. And so they, you know, created a family of choice, if you will. And as Roberta was saying, that those social networks naturally diminish as we get older. And so how do we replace them? It's a challenge. So San Francisco Village is an intentional community. We come together to create something that wasn't there before. And it's these kind of relationships that Roberta's talking about that people long for in their lives, this sense of I'm known and I know others and I belong to something bigger than myself. And as I'm, you know, maybe living here alone, somebody's noticing if, you know, I didn't show up for the last couple of weeks or if I'm, you know, if something's happened. We have a number of our members who made agreements with each other that they check in once a day via text message. So they just text each other by 9 o'clock to say, I'm up and about, all is well. And if you don't do that by 9 or 9:30, then they have, you know, well, then I want you to call me. And then, you know, so it kind of goes down the line. But it's very reassuring to know that somebody's paying attention.
Mm. Yeah. So it sounds like from what you've described so far that the San Francisco Village and the Village Movement, which tries to have people age in place, which basically I imagine means being able to stay in their home and in,
yeah,
their neighborhood as opposed to moving in to an assisted living or nursing home or some other kind of setup, is more than literally, you know, physical stability. It's really creating these networks of support.
It has everything to do with the relationships. The relationship that I think of it as a new kind of social fabric. It's because the social fabric that exists is worn away. It's torn in many places. And as you get older, you find that that's certainly the case. So again, how am I going to replace those people in my life? This is a way to do it. We have about 350 members in 22 different neighborhoods, and we have about 175 non-member volunteers. So again, that notion of social capital, how do we leverage these well-intentioned, heartfelt people that want relationship in their lives? And so we create all these various ways for these interactions to take place.
And how did this movement begin?
Well, it started in Boston about 15 years ago with a group of neighbors in Beacon Hill, a part of Boston, these were folks that were, you know, living individually in their own homes, and they recognized that they could do a whole lot better if they joined forces. So they came together and they created this. And about 4 or 5 years later, there was an article in the National Edition of the New York Times, which kind of went viral after like 2006. There were a lot of people around the country that said, I want this too. And so they started popping up all over. Now there are about 350 villages nationwide, and there are about 65 in the state of California. And we are working on creating a statewide or coalition of villages so that we can, you know, once again, it's like power in numbers, right? And so that's what we're about.
And we'll get to hearing more about how the village is formed and how it functions and other things about aging and creating supports and maintaining independence in just a moment. But first, I want to reintroduce the program. In case you're just joining us, this is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco. And on the web at KALW.org, I'm Joseph Pache. And tonight our guests are Dr. Patrick Arbour of the Institute on Aging, a nationally recognized expert on loneliness and its effects on older adults, Kate Hopke, the executive director of San Francisco Village, a nonprofit aimed at helping seniors stay in their homes as they age, and Roberta Rothman, a San Francisco Village member and city resident who's making the most of this current stage in her life. We invite you to call in with your questions or comments. Again, are you an older adult? What opportunities and challenges have you experienced as you've gotten older? And what resources have you found, or what resources would you like to see for yourself and other seniors here in San Francisco and the Bay Area? The number to dial to join our conversation is 1-866-798-TALK. Again, that's 1-866-798-8255. You can email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at the KALW website, or on our Facebook page. And you can also tweet us using the at City Visions KLW to reach us. So let's go to our first caller. We've got Ruth Ann from El Cerrito. Hi, Ruth Ann.
Good evening. I wanted to ask the panelists to mention that I'm a senior. I'm also physically disabled. I use a wheelchair. I'm in a single-family home that's wonderfully wheelchair accessible, and I have no interest in moving at all, and I'm wondering what the options are for avoiding getting more isolated and lonely as I get older.
Kate Hopke.
So are you familiar with Ashby Village? It's a similar organization to ours. It's in Berkeley and also covers El Cerrito. Again, a membership organization that
I wasn't interested in because they do all their communication online, and I want no part of that.
Okay. Patrick, do you have any thoughts about where she could find support to stay in her home?
Well, I'm really glad you called, and I really empathize with you when you say, I really want to stay in the home I'm in because it works for my, you know, situation with my wheelchair. So I think that that's really positive. I think the thing that just the fact that you called here tells me that you're curious, you're interested, and I think that that's really very powerful and profound. One of the things that you can also take advantage of, and perhaps you do, is that we have, for example, a 24-hour friendship line, which is a program for older people who just occasionally need to talk to somebody and talk to somebody confidentially. And so that could be a possibility, too, for you. If you just feel like I need to hear a human voice and I need someone to just really listen and communicate with me. So that might be something that you could add to your repertoire of ways in which you can stay connected to other people.
Yes, Kate.
Have you heard of Senior Center Without Walls?
No.
You can Google that, and they have a really robust program.
How can she find it without having to go online?
Thank you, Patrick.
Oh, I thought that's what she said, was that she was online.
No,
I apologize.
She doesn't want to do that, yeah.
Okay, Senior Center Without Walls. Well, I'm going to give you the phone number of San Francisco Village, and you can call me at the office, and I will put you in touch with them. Would that work?
Oh, are you a sweetie? Hold on a minute.
Okay. Senior Center Without Walls has a wonderful program for folks that are limited to their homes, and they have 30 or 40 different programs a month that you can interact on the telephone. You don't need to be online. And they do some great things. They have discussion groups and movie groups, and they play games on the phone and all different kinds of things.
Oh, music to my ears. What do you got?
Okay. Call me at 415-387-1375.
Okay. And I just introduced myself as the woman who called in to City Visions.
Yes, that would be great. And I will get you in touch with them.
Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks much, Ruth Ann, for your call.
Thanks for the program.
So how many people like that, like Ruth Ann, are there who just have a lot of things that they've put together to make their lives work, but really just need more than what they've been able to cobble together on their own.
A lot, Joseph, yeah. A lot. I mean, it's really difficult to quantify. But I would say, as Patrick talked about earlier, you know, that isolation and loneliness are reaching epidemic proportions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people find themselves without resources. Once they become isolated, they lose that access, that ability sometimes to reach out and get help for themselves. They don't know what they don't know. They don't know the right person to talk to. They don't have the right phone numbers. So it becomes kind of a slippery slope. So, like I said, the answer to your question is a lot.
Well, and I think many people who are alone, after a while, become very pessimistic that there will be anything in their community that will really speak to them in terms of how a community service organization could be of benefit, such as Ashby Village or, you know, Friendship Line or Senior Center Without Walls. I think it's really challenging. And I think also we don't want to overlook the potential of church groups or, you know, peer counselors or friendly visitors, because I think there are options. But what's hard about it, as you're saying, is that how do I navigate that system if I'm really not feeling up to par? I'm not feeling my best. And there's a lot of obstacles, I think, to finding out what's available in my community.
My question actually is, how do we find these people? And the only thing I can think of, which is not the best, is that they do go to doctors or hospitals or places like that when they have need. And the question is then, how can you then direct them from there into places that can help them?
Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, and for example, at Friendship Line, we get about 12,000 calls a month from older adults, their caregivers, or younger disabled. And what we find is that they often know what's out there, but they don't necessarily want that for a variety of reasons. But what they want is contact. You know, they want to hear a voice, a human voice. And so we find that is very important, because connections are what bind us to life. And you don't need to have 25 friends. The data suggests that if you have one or two people with whom you can have a meaningful conversation, that can really be the tipping point from being totally isolated to feeling a little bit better, that you have something to add and offer. And I think that's what the Village does. I think that's what Institute on Aging does. And again, a variety of aging organizations that value older people, you know, that respect older people and recognize that older people, you know, bring diversity and bring a lot of experience into a community if they are valued, you know. And in an age of society, that ain't easy.
And Patrick, what kind of data is out there that you are aware of that maybe connects what loneliness does, not only to someone's emotional state, but their cognitive state, their ability to kind of navigate in the world and find, reach out in a way that can bring them help?
Well, Dr. John Cacioppo has done a lot of research, Dr. Parasinato, Carla Parasinato, that you probably know as well, Kate. And what they're looking at is, you're absolutely right, that there is impact, that loneliness over, you know, a long period of time can really affect the way in which people think, you know. And so when you give somebody a senior center referral or whatever it might be over the telephone, if you're not aware of the consequences of loneliness and isolation, you're saying to yourself, oh, well, they're lonely, and here's a place nearby, they should go to that. But they won't go because they're very suspicious of that. You know, they don't trust it, because something has shifted in the structure of their brain and as a result of loneliness. So they're really hypervigilant. They're not trusting. And you have to really build a lot of rapport. But the way in which I think a lot of us are looking at social isolation and loneliness among older people is to prevent it by just what Roberta was saying. Those neighborhood circles are a way of keeping people in contact with each other so that you don't slip into isolation. So we're also interested in middle-aged people starting a process of being more in tune or aware of these other programs that are available. So it's not just restricted to somebody 60, but there are people in there that 50 to 60 corridor, for those of us in this room have passed through that, it's a challenge because it's saying, hey, that 6-0, that round birthday in this culture, which is very ageist, is a very big deal. And it might behoove people to start looking now at 40, 50 or whatever at the future. And how can I really, really take care of myself so I know what's ahead and I can find like-minded people? Just as Roberta was saying, I go into Walgreens and I see somebody from the village. It makes me feel good. Yeah. You know, it's very important.
Roberta, I wanted to ask you, what else could be potentially a barrier to people reaching out? For example, how much is admitting that you need help?
Well, that's a big issue for many of us who grew up very independent and are very proud of our independence. And sometimes you can't get them to do that. We've tried in many ways. And I think the idea of the village or the circle is non-threatening. You know, you're going to come and maybe we'll sit and talk about something, a movie, a book, something like that. And then you can get to be friendly. And I think then you're more likely to ask someone for help.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Kate.
We've at San Francisco Village, and I would say among many of my colleagues would agree with this, that it's a major obstacle. People not being able to ask for help, not being able to receive help because of, as Roberta said, the perceptions that you may think I'm weak or you may think that I'm a failure, or they have all kinds of connotations with it. And so they have a hard time saying, could you please, you know, have a volunteer come out here and help me? So a lot of people get over that obstacle by volunteering themselves. So they become a member of the village. They make some kind of an investment where they say, let me volunteer for a little while so that, you know, in effect, they're putting an investment in their karma bank, if you will, so that when the time comes that they do need help, that they're able to do it. And the other thing that we rely on is, as Roberta was talking about, is the building up of relationships over time. So we have 350 members. We have 22 different neighborhoods. We have 13 neighborhood circles. So Roberta's a leader of one of the neighborhood circles. And so they meet regularly. These are about a dozen people that get together in someone's home or out in the city someplace. And so over time, they're sharing their life's experiences and they're learning to trust one another. And that trust is fundamental in being able to ask for and receive help when the time comes.
So I'm going to reintroduce the program, but first I want to make sure Ruth Ann and anyone else who wants to know the phone number for the Senior Center Without Walls, our intrepid producer found it. I'll give you that number in just a moment so you can get pen and paper. But first I'm going to reintroduce the program. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're talking about a new movement, or not so new movement. It's been around for a decade and a half or so.
About a decade.
Is helping seniors and those over 60 age in place and build communities that help them to remain as independent and connected as possible. And so we have three guests who are helping us understand this. We have Patrick Arbour from the Institute on Aging, Kate Hopke, Executive Director of San Francisco Village, San Francisco's own version of this movement, which is a nonprofit aimed at helping seniors stay in their homes as they age, and Roberta Rothman, who is a member of such a village and has been talking about it with us this evening as well. The number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. You can also email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment at the KALW website, or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So for those of you who are interested in finding out the phone number for the Senior Center Without Walls, it is 1-877-797-7299. I'll repeat it again. It's 1-877-797-7299. Okay, so I have tons of questions about how the village actually works. So, Roberta, do you want to tell us more about that?
Well, I was just about to say, besides the villages, I mean, the circles and are getting together and doing interesting things. There are just a lot of lectures and meetings and different groups that we have within. And some of them we've picked up ourselves. For example, I was at a group meeting, and suddenly I said to someone, does anybody else like to play games? I'm a game player. I was brought up playing games. And some other woman said, oh, yes, I like go. You know, I like cards. So we started playing cards together, and then we came to Kate and said, there are probably other people who would like this. Why don't we start a game group? And so we now have a game group that meets. We only meet once a month. I think we're going to move that to twice a month. And we play Monopoly. I'm learning to play Mahjong at this age. We play cards. We play Scrabble. And I think, again, and all different people from different circles, and I think we have a book club, we have people discussing movies, so you're really appealing to all sorts of things, and hopefully we then appeal to people who might not belong to a circle, but will come to this kind of a meeting. And then there are lectures that are very important, wills, trusts, Social Security, all the things that are important to us, and then we meet each other that way, and a lot of friendships really formed that way, not only within the circle.
So there's activities that sound like they emanate from the group, and then there's volunteers who can help provide services. Is that right, Kate?
Right. So we like to think of what we do as a three-legged stool, and the first leg of that stool would be those non-member volunteers, and we also have many of our members who volunteer to help one another as well. So a member can call the office and say, I need help with grocery shopping, I need help getting the laundry done, I need some, can you send me a child and teach me how to use an iPhone? all these kinds of different things that come up in their lives that they can no longer accomplish on their own. So we reach out to our group of volunteers and we match them up. Then we also, as Roberta was saying, we have monthly programs. We have between 30 and 35 different programs per month. And our goal is to inform people about what they need to know so that they can navigate the transitions of aging that are up ahead. I think every one of our members would say that I want to stay in charge of my life, and there's this fear that I'm not going to. And so we're trying to equip them with all kinds of information that they need to do that. The other day we had a very successful program. We had a packed house. Two young ladies were coming there to talk about the benefits of medical marijuana and as pain relief and sleep aids. And so a lot of people came to that. As Roberta said, we've got somebody that comes and talks about wills and trusts. We've got a drama therapist who's coming next month too. So we have all different kinds of things, storytelling and writing and all different ways for people to express themselves.
So I'm thinking about, you know, assisted living or other types of senior communities. How is this model different? What does it not give? It sounds like it gives a lot, but what does it not provide?
Well, I would say that when a person is ready to move to assisted living, they're really requiring assistance with activities of daily living. So those So those would be things like bathing and dressing and medication management and maybe some mobility assistance. And so their life has really become they're in need of more one-on-one attention. That's not always the case. Sometimes people move to assisted living a little bit ahead of that, but they can typically see something like that coming. And so the folks that are joining a village they're independent, they're living independently. They want to maintain that for as long as possible. So, you know, in the field of aging, we talk about a continuum, right? So you start off on that continuum somewhere, you know, in your teenage years, no? But, you know, when we're talking about older age, you know, somewhere around 60. And then if you look at the next 20 or 30 years, there's this whole progression of things that might occur where you're going to require additional assistance. So we're trying to enable people during a period when they're feeling independent and in charge of their lives to stay that way longer. It doesn't mean a village doesn't preclude someone from having to move to assisted living or to a continuing care retirement community. That's oftentimes the next step. But you know, we're trying to stretch out that time when they're feeling really independent, and and that they're a member of something. They belong to something bigger than themselves. We've had a lot of people move on to assisted living or to a continuing care retirement community, but they maintain their membership because they've met people and because they know what the value is that they're deriving from that membership. So.
Are there thoughts that villages around the country will start to look at how to support people to stay in their homes even at the stage where they would otherwise go into assisted living?
You bet. The whole notion of scope and what is it that we can provide people. In San Francisco Village, we're beginning to have these conversations about how can we provide some more one-on-one attention. So we're talking about, you know, the possibility of maybe hiring a part-time social worker who could help focus that and develop what are called care circles, you know, so that if somebody gets a diagnosis and they're living at home and they really need a little extra attention, can we kind of leverage our volunteers or leverage their friends or use a social worker to help make that happen? We do see that in the future.
Mm. Where does your money come from besides the membership?
About 25 or 30% of our money comes from membership. We are very fortunate to live in San Francisco, and we get funding from the city of San Francisco. About 38% of our budget comes from a grant from the Department of Aging and Adult Services. And then the rest of it is individual donors and foundation grants.
Great. And Patrick, back to the data for a moment. What can programs like this do to, in fact, extend or expand the ability for people to stay able to live independently? Do you have any information on that?
Well, I was just thinking, as both Roberta and Kate were speaking, is that I think what a lot of programs, certainly the Village, does is help people learn how to adapt and adjust to the changing circumstances of getting older. And I loved your example, which is, hey, I like to play games, but you need somebody else to play it with you. And you know, it's best like Monopoly. You want to have four or five people in it. And but if you're just on your own, where do I find these people? You can't just pick them up at Safeway and say, let's go play Monopoly. And so through the Village and through those contacts, you can see, hey, would people like to do that? And then you find out people do. So it means moving away from the old paradigm, which is I'm in my 70s or 80s or 90s, and I have to give up everything, because that's an ageist outlook, that you just have to give it up. There's nothing you can do. But the Village Movement provides this option, which is, as you were saying very eloquently about the neighborhood villages or the neighborhood circles, that really is helpful. But the other thing I want to go back to is the theme of social isolation, which is, you know, the risk of premature death as a result of social isolation is greater than people who smoke 15 cigarettes a day, greater than people who are obese, you know, and we just don't really get it in society that we've got to do something about social isolation. And as we see these numbers increasing in terms of the 85-plus, and a lot of people are going to be juggling some kind of health issue, that we need each other. You know, Dr. Cacioppo says, as social creatures, we're hardwired. We want to affiliate and connect. And so when we slip into isolation, it doesn't feel good to a social creature. And that's why it can lead to feelings of depression or anxiety or substance abuse. So just, you know, what the Village is doing with all their different programs, what the message really is you don't have to be isolated. You don't have to be. You know, and that's what we say through the Friendship Line as well, is that you can call, you can connect, you know, and certainly one of the referrals would be to the Village if they are willing to accept that.
Let me go ahead and reintroduce the program one final time. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. I'm Joseph Pache, and tonight we're speaking with Dr. Patrick Arbour of the Institute on Aging, Kate Hopke, Executive Director of the San Francisco Village, a nonprofit aimed at helping seniors stay in their homes as they age, and Roberta Rothman, a San Francisco Village member. The number to dial to join our conversation is 866-798-TALK. Again, that's 866-798-8255. You can email or text us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment to the KLW website, or tweet us at cityvisionskalw. So, Kate, you wanted to say something there.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the whole conversation around health. And oftentimes we don't think about all of the factors that go into somebody's health, you know. And so when one of our members goes to see a doctor and they spend 15 minutes and they're talking about, you know, blood pressure and all those kinds of things, but rarely does the doctor have the opportunity to say, what did you have for breakfast and how did you get your groceries this week and are you getting your laundry done and have you talked to anybody in the last week and those kinds of things. So what I wanted to say is that the village model, it really fills a gap. It meets an unmet need in terms of the health of the individual, because so much about that health is not physical, it's social. So I just wanted to point out there was a really interesting study done in 2011. It was funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, and they interviewed 1,000 MDs, and that 85% of these physicians said that their patients had unmet social needs that contributed to poor health. They were aware of that. And that 4 out of 5, or 80% of the 85%, were confident that they could not address these needs. They didn't know where to refer their patients. They didn't know how to help that patient get those needs met. So I think what's happened on a kind of a grassroots level is that older adults are sort of, they're banding together to say, well, we know we need this, mm-hmm. And we're willing to contribute to making it happen. And so that's kind of been the success of the village model.
I want to get a caller on here, Joanne from San Francisco. Joanne, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
It's a wonderful program. Thank you for all this information. I've been writing it all down.
So what's your question or comment?
A couple of comments, and there's questions that are in there. One of them is that it's tricky to apply for the new housing that's being developed if you don't fall into the lottery system questions, you know, like number one, homeless folks who were relocated during the 60s or evicted due to the Ellis Act. It, you know, the lottery runs through, and I think there's a big gap of people who need to move on because their families have, their children are independent, and now they're in these places that are a little bit too big, but it's hard to get another place.
And you said you had a second comment there?
Yep.
Go ahead.
Another one is that many of seniors, we love to work. We love to be of service to our community. And if we can work like 5, 10, 15 hours a week, it means a lot to us and to the people that we work with, actually. The problem is that with the Social Security system, at least in my in my case, after I, you know, I get like $700 in Social Security, and then when I work 5 hours a week at minimum wage, I get the $60, and then after that, they take 50% of the gross. That's kind of, it's a little hard.
So there's not a lot of incentive.
Well, only if you love to work and be of service to your community.
Very good. Well, thank you so much, Joanne, for your questions. I'm going to have you take your answers off the air. Kate was scribbling down a couple of things while you were talking. So, Kate, what do you make of Joanne's comments?
She was making me think of the Mayor's Office of Economic and Workforce Development, and I'm not sure if they have a program specifically for older adults to help them find work, but I think it might be a resource. It might be a place to start.
Say that name again.
I believe it's called the Office of Economic and Workforce Development through the Mayor's Office.
Okay. And I imagine for those other listeners who want to look up or find out about these but find navigating the web a little difficult, 311 might be a really good place to call and ask these kinds of questions.
Well, Institute on Aging also has an information and referral center, and that number is 415-750-4111. 415-750-4111. And that's called IOA Connect. And so the staff who answer those calls also have access to numbers and might be an asset, you know, for people as well. Because I think part of doing this kind of a program, which is so great to be invited to do this, is to offer resources not only about our own agencies, but also, well, the three of us have been around, you know, and so we are aware of things. And I think having resources, whether somebody actually uses them or not, is power. Mm-hmm. You know, that I know I could make this call and somebody might have something for me.
And how about Joanne's comment about people needing to downsize, you know, their spaces and not being able to really do that? You said that earlier in the hour, that there really just isn't a lot of options for people to step into a different
Well, we don't have product. We don't have, you know, housing. You know, we know that's a tremendous problem, not only here, but really throughout California, particularly Northern California. Mm-hmm. And so I really, again, empathize with Joanne when she says this, that I know I need to shift, you know, consolidate. But if I do the lottery system, I mean, these programs like, you know, Bridge Housing, for example, associated with Institute on Aging, we have like, I think it's an 8-year waiting list. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous, you know.
Kate? I was just going to mention that there's another program, and it's administered by Northern California Presbyterian Homes and Services. It's called, I think it's called Home Share. And what they're trying to do is match people who own homes with people that are looking for a place to live. And so, I'm sorry, but I don't have the telephone number, but I believe it's called Home Share. Okay. And it's through Northern California Presbyterian Homes and Services.
We'll try to find it and put it linked on our website to that.
Great.
We just have about 6 or 7 minutes left. I was just curious, Roberta, start with you. As you have had the experiences that you've had, what would you tell other listeners who are feeling like they're so far away from having to think about this, what advice would you give to a younger listener at this stage?
I would say volunteer with a program that has older people in it, because I think one of the things that you learn is that it's not so terrible, and there's a lot you can do from it. Even within our own group, in my circle, with those in the 60s and 70s, we had 3 90-year-olds, 92, 95-year-olds. And we learned a lot from them, and we made us feel better. I would say they were examples to us that, okay, we have another 20 or 30 years, and we can still be active and involved. Mm-hmm. Though you have to accept, I think, I call them little losses. You know, there are things one gives up as time goes on. Mm-hmm. You just have to accept them, but that doesn't mean giving up, you know, everything. And so I think working with older people is a good idea for some younger people. I think Kate has said that.
And how about, Kate, how do people get to volunteer with your organization?
They should contact us either on the web. Our web address is www.sfvillage.org. And our phone number is 415-387-1375. You know, I just wanted to add something to what Bobby was saying about, you know, advice to younger people. Get to know some older people. These chasms that exist, you know, in between generations, they're made up. We had a 6 young men in their 30s come to a recent volunteer training, and our trainer said to them, "Why are you here?" And this one young man in his 30s said, "Well, I'm new to San Francisco, so you know, most likely he's here. He's one of those young men has a tech job, you know." And he said, "I'm new to the city, and I want to know some real San Franciscans." Mm-hmm. He wants the history. He wants to know what life has been like here. So, you know, Patrick has talked about ageism, and we're very conscious of that at San Francisco Village. And we're, you know, trying to draw awareness to aging so that it's not such a taboo, and it's not such a mystery. There was a wonderful writer for the New York Times, and I can never remember how to pronounce her last name. But anyway, she writes about aging a lot. And she defined ageism as an internalized bias against my own future self.
Mm.
And I think about that, and I think that it's an inside job. You know, we're all walking around, and we're all kind of collectively doing this to ourselves. And we're not talking about it, and we're not facing it. We're not disrupting it. And so I think that, you know, it starts in your 20s and 30s, you know, where you're not thinking, oh, old people, you know, I don't want to talk to old people. And so, you know, I think to confront that and say, you know, what's missing here? What are these, and what could I gain from having this conversation with this older person? Because usually the word love comes up, you know, and I just don't think that there's enough of that anyway. But I think for young people, you know, to understand that, you know, this is an important omission in their lives if they don't have older adults.
I just want to get one email in here. Does the Village offer referrals to contractors who can help you make your home suitable for aging?
Yeah.
So back to Joanne's question that, you know, how do you navigate a much bigger space when you had a family living with you?
So this was actually the third leg of the stool that I never got to.
Okay.
We have volunteers, we have programs, and then we have this preferred provider network. And so we absolutely do have trained professionals that we can refer people to when volunteers are not the right solution. And one other thing I will just add is that as a benefit of membership, we offer our members a home safety assessment, and we pay for it. And it's a wonderful way to kick off your membership.
Is there some sort of discount that you get for using those preferred providers?
Sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so just a minute or two here. You all are working with older people. You are around older people. You are older people.
thank you, Joseph, for that.
What have you learned, and how has that changed the way you think about life? Why don't we start with you, Patrick, and we'll end with you, Roberta.
Yeah, I think what I've learned about getting older is that one can really develop the capacity for compassion and empathy, and to really hear what people are trying to say about the aging process. And people that have really good genes and maybe have good resources might find aging not so challenging. You know, they might have family intact who live around them or with them. But I don't think that's really most people. I think most of us are going to have health challenges. Most of us are going to have, you know, some kind of financial challenges. Most of us are going to be caregivers for someone or be recipients of care. So compassion, I think, is the word I would leave it with.
Kate?
The word that comes to my mind is choice. And one of the things I love, having worked with older adults now for about 20 years, is I get to reflect with them about the choices that they've made and the ones that are still ahead of them, that sense of agency or autonomy it doesn't leave us unless we abandon it. So it's available to all of us.
Well, I would say friendship. That I think that's something that you have to maintain and keep as you get older. And I think that's one of the concerns we all have, is that people do get isolated, and you really need to reach out and have friends.
So this is our music for heading out tonight.
I love it.
Yes. So this is that's City Visions for this evening, and I want to thank my guests, Dr. Patrick Arbour of the Institute on Aging, Kate Hopke, the Executive Director of San Francisco Village, and Roberta Rothman, a San Francisco Village member. Thanks to all of you for joining me this evening.
Thank you, Joseph.
You're welcome.
For a link to this and other City Visions shows, to let us know what you thought about tonight's program, to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page at kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Grace Wan. Join me next week as we speak with Misha Mosley, the Executive Director of the Black Teacher Project, about education, diversity, and equity in the classroom. This is Joseph Pache. Thanks for listening. Good night and have a great week, and enjoy when you're 64.